Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on our Wednesday morning Bible study or whatever day you happen to be listening in. Joined this morning, I am Pastor John Nelson, joined by Pastor Harvey Nelson, Marie Nelson, Janelle is on, and a special guest today, too, my aunt Ellen has joined us as well. So you might hear some voices chiming in at different points with questions and comments. But the main voice today will be Pastor Harvey. So go ahead and get us started on St. Thomas the Apostle.
This summer, the narrative lectionary allows people to do some creative things with their summer texts. And so a group of pastors in this particular area in Willmar has said that they will be doing commemorations of saints, mostly those who are listed in the ELW, the Evangelical Worship Book, and the summer dates for them, if possible. So right now, we're dealing with Thomas the Apostle. His date that is listed is July 3rd. These dates very often relate to when the person was believed to have died, although a number of people, they have no real idea of the year or the date. So they assign the date for various reasons. So we're dealing with Thomas the Apostle. The ELW, the Revised Common Lectionary, isn't that old. It's come into being since I've been a pastor, probably been around for about 30, 35 years. The text that they've used to go with Thomas the Apostle are rather interesting. They choose an Old Testament text, and the one they have chosen for that is Judges 6, 36 to 40. We won't read it. I'll just remind you of what it is. You have the judge Gideon, who is getting a call from God to help to relieve his people or his tribe from oppression. But he's not sure if it's really truly a call for God, so he does some negotiating with God. And in Judges 6, he says to God, "Well, if you're really calling me, I've got this fleece here. I'll put it on the ground, and I want you to have to show that it's really you who's speaking to me. Let the fleece be full of dew, and the ground around it dry." And he woke up the next morning, and that was the case. But that wasn't enough for Gideon. So then he said, "Lord, now I want the ground around it to be wet and the fleece to be dry." And woke up the next day, and that was it. So he thought that it validated his call. One wonders why one would pick that text to go with Thomas the Apostle. But it can probably relates to Thomas in John 20 saying to the disciples, "Unless I see Jesus and touch his side, so forth, I will not believe that he's resurrected." And so he's kind of testing God. And God appeared to Gideon and responded to his test. And now God is will appear to Thomas. Jesus will appear to Thomas and respond to his test. So I think that's probably the connection that they use with Judges. The other connection that they use, the other text that they use, is Ephesians 4, 11 to 16. It's a wonderful text, and I'll read it, and you can always scratch it a little bit and say, why that one? But in any event, and verse 11 writes, "The gifts God gave were that some should be apostles, hence Thomas, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, to equip the saints for the work of ministry for building up of the body of Christ, until all of us come to the unity of faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to maturity, to the measure of the full stature of Christ. This is probably a roundabout way of talking about Thomas's confession in John 20, where he says to Jesus, "You are my Lord and my God," which is a full confession of the full stature of Christ. And Paul goes on, we must no longer be children tossed and fro and blown about by every wind of doctrine, by people's trickery, by their craftiness and deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, you must grow up in every way unto him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by every ligament with which it is equipped, as each part is working properly, promotes the body's growth and building up itself in love. The exact connection of that, Thomas, one can speculate about, but I believe it is that he is an apostle, and that he confesses the full stature of Christ. We don't know much about him. We will talk a little bit. He's definitely listed as one of the 12 disciples, and he's listed that way in in the three synoptic gospels and the book of Acts. So they pair Thomas somewhat differently. That probably doesn't matter a whole lot, but Thomas and Philip are two of the disciples that seem to have the most Greek name. John will pair them together. Matthew pairs Thomas with the disciple Matthew. Mark pairs Thomas with Matthew and James, the son of Alphaeus. Luke does Matthew, Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus. So they are paired that way, and often that pairing is probably telling you something about it. Acts 1:13, as he lists the 11 disciples at the time, because they were going to gather to replace Judas, pairs Philip with Thomas. So Philip and Thomas are paired by both John and then by Luke in Acts. That's just, to me, interesting. I'm not sure what to make of it. Although the pairing is both mostly of Matthew, the tax collector, and Thomas, or Philip and Thomas. Philip and Thomas are both Greek names. When we get to the Gospel of John, we'll see that John takes some pains to tell you that it's Thomas Didymus. And so he's giving you the Greek name. he's giving you both names together, both the Greek and the Aramaic version of Thomas. So that's the references that we have to Thomas. We don't know much about him. Early church tradition, with which I don't put much stock in, says that he went off to India and that he was killed with a spear around 54 to 56 AD, so about 20 years after Jesus' death. It is interesting, I think, that there is a church in India, in Kerala province, which is on the western side of India, and it's called itself the Bartoma Church, and tries to trace its origin back to Thomas. It's worship and so forth, theology is very Eastern Orthodox, Syrian Orthodox kind of theology. When I was at Drew, we had the privilege of going with a friend of ours who was a member of that church up to the Bronx in New York. And we went to a 2.5 hour worship service. There were no pews. We were standing the whole time. They had benches along the wall for the really old folk, but everyone else stood. And a good part of that worship service was taken up with the vesting of the priest. I found to be very interesting. But that church claims to come from Thomas. It may, in some roundabout way, these church traditions usually have a kernel of truth in what they say, but they add a lot of embellishments, so you cannot be too sure. So, in any event, we will go on with the Gospel of John itself. The first reference you get to Thomas is in John 11:16. Now, a little background here. Jesus has been in Jerusalem. Things did not go terrifically well in Jerusalem when he was there. In fact, they were trying to pick up stones to stone him. And Jesus left and went away. But then, while he was gone away from Jerusalem, he got the news that Lazarus, his friend, the brother of Mary and Martha, was sick. They sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, the one whom you love is ill." And Jesus' response to that is kind of ambiguous. He says, "This illness does not lead to death, rather it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." So Jesus didn't leave. He stayed there 2 days longer. And in verse 7, and after he said this to the disciples, he said, "Let us go to Judea again." And then the disciples say, "Rabbi, the Jewish leaders were just now trying to stone you, and you are going to go there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they have see the light of this world. Those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them." But Jesus is saying, "I'm going by God's light and not by what human beings say." After this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, he's fallen asleep. He'll be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death. They thought he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I'm glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Now we get to our Thomas reference. Thomas, who was called a twin, so he's giving you both the name Thomas and Didymus, both his Greek and Aramaic name. And he said, "Let us also go that we may die with him." Now, the Greek is a little ambiguous there, that we may die with him. Does the him refer to Lazarus, who's dead, or does it refer to Jesus, who's going into a very dangerous place? There were some of the early interpreters who said Thomas the twin is the twin to Jesus, and those people were somewhat Gnostic, and they came up and with a number of sayings of Jesus and created what we call the Gospel of Thomas, which most people regard as not a true gospel or not a true book. But anyway, they're saying that Thomas was Jesus's twin. Of course, that doesn't fit very well with what the rest of the New Testament says, but you can speculate if you want to. So, any event, I think what this does show about Thomas is that he is a loyal disciple. He's very this worldly oriented. let us go up there to die. He is going, following Jesus into a dangerous unknown and into an unknown. So he shows a certain amount of faith in Jesus in this particular text. So I think it's good to keep that in the background, because to me, Thomas is a very interesting character. If I'm going to be honest, he's probably in some ways one of my favorite disciples for several reasons. But anyway, that's the first reference to Thomas that you have in the book of John. Second reference is the text that you have for Sunday, which is John 14, 1-7. Now, a little context here. This is Jesus is at his Last Supper with his disciples. He's washed their feet, and he's talked to them about his commandment to love one another. And he's talked to Judas, and Judas has left. And then he tells the disciples that one of them will betray him. And of course, Peter says, no, that won't be the case. But Jesus is pretty sure that he's going to deny him three times. So that's the immediate context of this text. So we've got John 14, 1-7. Let's read John 14, 1-8. And then we'll come back to it. Whoever would like to read that.
I've got it up. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, but I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, so that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way of the place. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way? Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you know me, you will know my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, and we will be satisfied.
Well, this text we had not too long ago as a sermon text too. And so we're going to focus more on the text as to what Thomas and Jesus, the encounter between Thomas and Jesus. Jesus has told his disciples, after he's made clear that Peter is denying him, that don't be troubled though, I'm going to prepare a place for you. And there's a lot of space in that place. And I'll take you to myself. And then verse 4 is a rather important verse. It's a transitional verse. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas is a good, practical, down-to-earth guy. And Thomas says, Lord, we do not know where you're going. How can we know the way? Jesus has made a shift that Thomas has not made. Jesus is saying, I'm going to a place, and I'm going to come back and take you there. And so Thomas is focusing on geography. Where is that place? Where is Jesus going? Where is heaven? Where? That's his question. And Jesus in verse 4 has said, and you know the way to the place where I am going. But Jesus is more interested in the way to the place than the place itself. And Thomas is interested in the place. And so he says, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way? So he's still thinking of what's the road to get there. And Jesus is saying, I'm not talking about a geographical road. I'm talking about a means into the reality of God. And that's why he responds saying to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. So Jesus is making one of these important I am statements in response to Thomas. And what he's saying is, the way into life with God is in me. The way into the truth of God is me. The way into the life of God is me. And then he emphasizes that rather clearly to Thomas. No one comes to the Father except through me. You know me, you will know my Father also. So he is affirming what John has said back in John 1:18, that Jesus is in the bosom of the Father, and he reveals God. He is the way to know God.
It's actually one of the labels of the early church. We heard recently about how Christians were first called Christians in Antioch, but even prior to that, one of the terms for the early church and Christians was followers of the way. That's actually a term that I gravitate towards. I kind of like that idea of being a Christian means being a follower of the way of Jesus Christ.
Thomas did not make the shift. As again, I say, he's a down-to-earth, practical, geographical guy trying to analyze the political situation in John 11. And now here again, he's trying to find out about the geography of heaven. And Jesus says the geography of heaven is not a place, but it is a way through me. And Philip seems to be going to where Jesus wants to go, because Philip says, Lord, show us the Father, and we will be satisfied. And then Jesus is going to correct him and said, I've been with you the whole time, but if you want to see the Father, see me. So this encounter of Thomas, he's moving. He hasn't made it there yet, but he's moving in that direction. He's trying to take the reality that he knows, geography, politics, whatever, and he's trying to see how Jesus fits with all of that. So I like a certain honesty about him. I also like the fact that he was certainly willing to go and die with Jesus, most likely. And he shows some real character in a number of ways. The text that they did not give us for Thomas is John 20. And that's just as well, because actually in the Revised Common Lectionary, every single year you're going to be preaching on this Thomas text from John 20. So you get it as much as any text you're going to get. There are very few texts that you get that you're going to have the same text year after year after year. But that first Sunday after Easter is going to pop up Thomas. So we don't have to focus on that whole Thomas text, but we will focus on the part of it that really tells us a bit more about Thomas. So if you turn to John 20, verses 24 through 29, this will be the Thomas section. Again, a reminder that in John 20, Jesus is resurrected from the dead. He appears, first of all, to Mary Magdalene, and she goes and tells the people what they had said. But they really don't believe her very much. It is just too much to comprehend. Then that Easter evening, Jesus appears to the disciples and gives them the Holy Spirit and tells them that they have the authority to forgive and retain sins. And then we pick up with verse 24. Would someone be willing to read 24 through 29?
I can. But Thomas, who was called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." A week later, The disciples were again at the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hands and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet come to believe."
That's a wonderful text, and it's got a lot of things in it we can talk about, but we'll just focus on this encounter between Thomas and Jesus. So again, you'll notice that John makes sure to point out that it's Thomas the twin, just kind of saying the same thing with just two different words, because Thomas and twin mean the same thing. And he tells you that he's one of the 12. So this is John's way of getting him listed as one of the disciples. He wasn't with them. But he's very specific. He says, "Unless I see and I touch, I won't believe." I wouldn't be too hard on him. The other disciples had told him they'd seen Jesus. And of course, Mary had come earlier and told him that she had seen Jesus. And they didn't believe her either. They had to see him themselves. And so Thomas is not being very much different than they were. But he adds to it, "I must also touch." So he's acting kind of like Gideon did back in Judges. "I've got these categories that Jesus has to fulfill if I'm going to believe." So Jesus appears, but his main part of this appearance seems to be he wants to talk to Thomas. He greets them all, but then he turns to Thomas and says, "Okay, touch me." And then they translate it, "Do not doubt, but believe," which I think is a very unfortunate translation. There are different words for doubt and faithlessness. The Gospel of Mark uses the word for doubt in two places. One is when Peter is walking on the sea and beginning to doubt, and he begins to sink. So Peter has faith, but doubt rears its head, and even as he's walking on the sea. The second place where they use the word doubt in Matthew is in Matthew 28, when the disciples meet Jesus on the mountain, and after he's resurrected, and they say they worshiped him and doubted. And again, it's the same kind of doubt. It's the doubt that happens with faith. But that is not the word that is used here in John 20. The word used here is apistos, which means no faith, faithless. Do not be faithless, but believe. Pistos means to believe. Apistos is to have unbelief. So he's saying, do not doubt, but believe. No, do not be faithless, but believe. So this is what Jesus is saying to him. And Thomas's response is the highest confession that's made about Jesus in any of the Gospels. He says, "My Lord and my God." So he is affirming that Jesus is his ruler, his Lord, and that Jesus is God. That's a rather remarkable statement. It's the exact opposite of faithlessness. It is, in a sense, kind of the highest form of faith. So Thomas has come a long way in a short time. He's gone from just being here and now oriented, geography, politics, whatever, to seeing that Jesus is the way to God and that Jesus is God. That's a remarkable accomplishment. One of the reasons I admire Thomas is that he could learn. He kind of was from Missouri. He had to show him, but Jesus did. And then Jesus said, "Blessed are those who believe without seeing," which is a way of saying you have to come to your own recognition that Jesus is Lord and God. So that's the other main Thomas text. There is one more reference to Thomas in John 21. And this is another resurrection appearance of Jesus. This time, the resurrection appearance is up in Galilee. It's not in Jerusalem. We are told they're at the Sea of Galilee. And Simon Peter and his brother and so forth, they are fishermen. And so in verse 2, Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, which the sons of Zebedee, two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. They said, we will go with you. So they go out fishing. And then you have this story of the miracle of the catching of fish, Jesus telling them where to catch the fish. And then Jesus, they're bringing the fish in. Jesus eats with them. And then Jesus talks to Peter and restores him after his denials. So, well, that's the references you have to Thomas, that he was following Jesus. He had followed up to Galilee. He's part of the disciple community. And he has seen the resurrected Jesus. So that's Thomas. Do you have questions or comments?
One of the things about the Gospel of John, it contains the most references to signs. The other Gospels have, you know, some. I think Matthew tops out at 10. But the Gospel of John has 17 references to signs. It's a fairly major theme in the Gospel of John. You know, one of the first acts that Jesus does is called a sign at the wedding at Cana, where he turns the water into wine, and that's referenced as a sign. And all of these signs, of course, are given in order to point to God. And that's what a sign does, right? It points to something or gives you instructions or directions. And so I think this last comment by Jesus in John 20 is not the only time he says something along the lines of, blessed are those who have not seen signs and still have faith. And I think that's an important part of the Gospel of John. It's the latest written of the Gospel of John. And so, you know, written like in 90 or something like that. And so it is likely addressing a community in a church where most people did not encounter Jesus. I mean, if you look at, you know, the church, the congregation that Mark is writing to, and you know, earlier gospels and earlier epistles, you know, it's within the realm of possibility that those early communities had some, at least heard of firsthand accounts of Jesus, but the Gospel of John being written later, it's less likely that that's the case. And so, you know, I think the Gospel of John is really trying to make the argument that it's okay if you did not witness a miracle of Jesus, you should still believe, you should still have faith. And so, you know, that's, I think, one of the reasons you find this theme and why Thomas is, you know, put the way that he is, because this interaction between Thomas and Jesus allows Jesus, here at the end of the Gospel of John, we're near the end, to say that blessed are those who have not seen and yet still have faith, which of course is all of us. I mean, we've seen, I'm sure, signs of God's presence in various different ways, but we've never seen water turn to wine. We haven't seen Lazarus raised from the dead. We haven't, you know, all of those signs that the Gospel of John references. And so, you know, I think that's an important reminder. The Gospel of John is aimed, maybe even more so than the Synoptics, is aimed at us today. I mean, all of the Gospels are, but the Synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're addressing specific communities within time and place as well. Gospel of John is aimed at a more universal audience. And I think that's part of the reason we have this interaction between Thomas and Jesus, so that Jesus can say, everyone who reads this gospel, you know, hears the story of Jesus Christ, even if you don't see signs, you should still have faith. Faith should still be created within you from hearing about the good news of Jesus Christ.
I think that with the Gospel of John being written about 90 AD, 55, 60 years after Jesus' death, in my life, I try to look back now and think about who I knew 55, 60 years ago, and most of those people are gone. And in those days, people had an even shorter lifespan than we do. So John is writing to people who mostly have not seen anything of Jesus. And that's the way it's been ever since anyway. So it is, in fact, we can take Thomas to be someone who shows us what faith can be and how we can change.
And I certainly appreciate you lifting up, Dad, the fact that Thomas gets kind of a bad rap. How would you like to be known forever as the doubter? He's a more complex person. If you look at, all of the references to Thomas in the Gospel of John, he is more complex than just what he seems in John 20. And it is important to note that, yeah, he may have doubted at first, but he goes from that doubt to this amazing confession. A few others have had, I think of the Roman centurion who witnesses Jesus' death and says, truly, this man was the Son of God. From a Roman centurion, that maybe means something a little bit different than from a Christian.
And saying Lord.
Yeah. So Thomas here saying, you are my Lord and my God, that's a great sign of faith. He's gone from unfaith to deep faith. And Dad, you pointed out the apistos and pistos. And then in John 29, when Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe, that's pistesantes. So that's another form of that pistos, faith. So, blessed are those who have not seen yet have faith or have come to faith. There's a lot of translation here in John about belief, where faith might be a little more accurate a translation. And I think I would split that hair a little bit.
What chapter do you say that was? 9?
No, it's John 20, verse 29. Okay. When Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed, that believed is actually, the root word is pistos. So blessed are those who have not seen and have faith.
Actually, I think it's a participle.
Mine says come to believe.
Are believing.
Mine says come to believe.
It's a verb.
I don't want to get into a Greek argument right now, but I'll check it later. All right.
Might be able to help some people fall asleep later if we go into the Greek.
Yes. Well, I think that's basically what we have to say about Thomas. Any other comments?
I've gained appreciation of him more.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us. I guess we'll wrap it up there. God bless.